few words. We're going to do it roughly in order of people's involvement with Richard over the years. And we'll start with Bruce McAdams.
Well, I've had time to think about this, and I think the one theme in a minute I want to give is a great comradeship or collegiality among radio astronomers in particular. Almost any place you go to and call in on, you're welcome. And to prove that, I'll talk about an anecdote about umpteen years ago, I'm told not to say how many, when our eldest daughter was at a conference in the Netherlands. And on the tour around the north, they decided to call on Richard and Biddy. And so, what are they sharing?
Yeah.
Dave Jauncey's birthday party. So, that sort of opportunist, wherever you are, especially if you come to Sydney, drop in. Please don't hesitate. Thank you.
Phase two of Richard's career at Caltech. Marshall?
Is this thing on?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Bruce.
Usually
it echoes when you do it. Okay, well, anyway, Richard came to Caltech in 1972, I believe. And about a week after he came to me and said he had to go back to Sydney. And why do you have to go back to Sydney? Well, we're going to get married, he said. And then he went back to Sydney after having been in Caltech only a week. And so he came. And that was very good. They've been married for about 40 years. So I guess that was very good. I'll just say a few words about Richard's time at Caltech. We were very busy with the VLBI business at that time, and indeed there's almost about a half a dozen people here who were postdocs, not quite as early as Richard. One earlier than Richard, that was Dave Johnson, who was not at Caltech. But so Richard was the first of the long string of wonderful, excellent postdocs that came to Caltech in the 70s and 80s, we see it on later than that. And he had a lot of good fun, good times. Richard was a very dedicated, hard worker. But of course, he liked to go hiking, and we did a lot of that. In fact, we had lots of VLBI hikes. I'll just tell you all the things. Peter shaking his head, not in the because he was on his commission. And you may have noticed the picture that I showed this afternoon. That was Richard high up on Mount Waterman in the mountains above Pasadena. And there's another particular hike with Richard that I remember so well. And George Swenson, this must have been in 1972 or 3. George Swenson was there. And George Swenson, as some of you know, was great on inventing names and figuring out what to call things. He invented a rat's nest trick. Some of you may even remember that. RATS NEST stands for Radio Astronomers Trans Sierra Nevada Expedition and Sensing Institute. And the idea was that two groups of people, more of us all from the VLBI group, would go up to the Sierra Nevada Mountains. They run north south, and one group goes up the east side, one the west side. And they walk across and exchange keys in the middle. And I went from the west. Unfortunately, there's an extra, something like 400 meters more on that side than on the east side. Richard was on the east side, and he was the biggest and strongest of all the people, but somehow he got on the east side. I remember when he finally got up to the second day, and he was high up in the mountains, and he was complaining because he was back on the rocks there and gone up into some high pass and come down, and the bear had taken his pack of. He proudly showed us his camera, to bear their victim into, and he showed us how they are slobbered. I can't say that properly with an Australian accent, but you can do it later. And so for a long time after that, we kept hearing about his slobber-covered camera. And I don't know if you still have that camera or not, there was a hole in it, as I recall. Well, as I said, Richard was a hard worker. We were starting to build a VLDI correlator at that time. That was an awful lot of work and a lot of aggravation. And Richard was really very cheerful about that. And about everything else, he was a wonderful person to be with. And then he went off to work with Harry or someone. And, well, it's a very good opportunity to go to work, and got into working with Harry in Holland, and then I guess he stayed there for quite a long time. Other people have talked about that. But we had a wonderful time with Richard and with Vinny and with Dan in Pasadena.
Thank you, Marshall. Now to move on to, I guess, phase three in the long years in the Netherlands, Harry.
Thank you. Of course, indeed, Richard came to Holland from Sydney via, I think, 3 years or so in California. And that's a very brave thing to do, to come from California to Holland. I find it much more plausible to turn that around. But the amazing thing is, of course, that in Holland, in the radio astronomy, we have a lot of Australians. Frank Kerr, I think, was the first one to come and to collaborate in putting together an all-star map of VH1 distribution and the velocity field of the Milky Way in the late 50s. And then when the Vernalis cross plans came, we had, let's see, Brian Robinson, Chris Christensen,
Gordon Robertson.
Brian Robinson, wasn't it?
Gordon and Brian.
I got it corrected all through their speech. That's the way Australians are. Well, but that's really not as bad. Calvin Wellington, John O'Sullivan, a brilliant engineer, who made hundreds of millions at the CSIRO for work he did in Holland. But that's a good story. And of course, Bill Agos and Ron Eakers, who came to Groningen and made the Westerbork telescope very productive and put Groningen back on the world map for astronomy. And so, but you know, in the end, it turned out all these Australians were transients. The one Australian who came was Richard, and he stayed for, I think, for over 30 years. So he's not an Australian, he's a Dutchman. He's a Dutch astronomer, he has a Dutch passport, and we asked him and Billy, and we welcomed him back home. So, now that he's a free man, I must say that Richard lived sort of by a maxim of one of my favorite English literary figures, Oscar Wilde, who said, "Progress is the realization of utopia." I think that's the maxim for great leadership. If you have a utopia, then that is a distant goal which may or may not come within reach, but it can optimize all the things you do in a day or in a week or in a month or in a year, because you have that goal that gives you both direction and that can also give you more momentum. Now, I think Richard's goal, when not too late after he came to Holland, was that European VLBI should be a good system and that it should be centered in the Netherlands in something which we now call Jive. And that's what he strove for, and of course, that is in fact he realized. So he realized his first utopia. But in human life, when you have utopias that are actually realized, you very soon form other utopias. His next utopia, I think, is the SKA. Now, should we be sorry for him for not realizing that utopia just yet? Well, I think not really, because you know, in Germany there's a saying that is, der Weg ist das Ziel, the road is the goal, that your life trajectory is, with all of the trials and tribulation, is where you achieve the meaning of your life, all the achievements on your way. And so you should not really feel sad if you haven't quite reached that, because the meaning is not in the very end. We all know what the very end is, but you know, it is what you do, what you enjoy, and what you achieve en route. And we all know that Richard achieved a great deal, and we in Holland, and I think we in Europe, and we in the world are grateful for his wonderful contributions to our science, which I think will propagate into the future. Now, talk about the future and about this goal, I think most of you know, of course, that we in Europe live in precarious times, and that it is still conceivable that in Portugal and Spain, things will implode, and that will cause huge havoc in our lives. We scientists tend to ignore those threats to society, but it is very real even today. In that case, Oscar Wilde has another maxim which is loved by astronomers and which will then be very relevant, and that is, we are all in the gutter. Hello. We are all in the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stars.
Instrumental in defining it and defining its core letter. And I was not going to reminisce on how Richard and I first met, but there was a hike involved as well. I think we went around the Huygens Laboratory three times, and I can't remember whether it was me trying to convince Richard to hire me, or Richard trying to convince me to hire me. So founding of Jive is this year 19 years ago, and so we have something to celebrate next year. We will have a new building. We will close Richard Mark IV correlator. We will presumably have new funding, and we hope to have a new legal entity for Jive next year, when it is 20 years after founding Jive. And if you come to Jive, and if you work at Jive, there is still a lot of Richard Scalisi there. In fact, I realized that preparing for the visiting review panel a month ago, we were still plotting the same metrics that Richard helped defining when we were starting correlations. Empty meetings, so management team meetings, have been the same format since Richard defined them. Everybody has their say around the table, and in the end, it's the director who decides. Yes. I suspect, but it's still my way, yes. And I suspect that it's actually very, very Dutch thing to do. So I agree with Harry that Richard is very, very Dutch in these matters. So when Richard left Jive, we had a farewell party. You saw a picture of how we gave Richard all the old tapes at that point. And then, Salt did not remind you of that, we gave him a very, very expensive, yet completely worthless present, namely one of the old Mark IV tape recorder heads that one of the engineers had mounted. It cost a lot of money when you buy them, but now, since we don't use tapes, they are completely worthless. And today, at your retirement party, I'm going to do an even worse thing, because I'm not going to give you a present. But I'm going going to ask you to donate something to us. I need something from you back. And I suspect you're a clever man, so I fear that you already start to feel what's coming. And as our English colleagues would put it, we need something iconic back from you. My cover stands.
That's why I understand the joke.
And so when you retired, I think this is when you have to learn to sit still. And Roy already referred to that. That will be very difficult for you. And that's also something we want from you. Because we have an appointment for you on the 4th of May, and I was assured by your boss, your real boss, that this is possible. And you will report to Kate Lowe, who is a painter. And it's not a present from us to you, but it's really something we should back for you. We would like to have your painting in our new building next year. I speak on behalf of the, I think 80% of the GI management is here, Arpad, ladies, where's Salt, and a lot of members of the GI board. Hans is the new chair, Anton, Simon, Mike, I'm not forgetting anybody that would be more, I think that's it. And of course, all of the GI staff, we would like to congratulate you not on your retirement, but then at least on the wonderful career.
Richard was involved right at the very start of the EVN, even before the EVN was the EVN. But it was his vision, inspiration and commitment which transformed the EVN from that experimental stage into the fantastic capability it is today. And he passed on those qualities to his successors, to Mike and to Hal, and that has all been a vital part of the process. Richard, of course, brings a huge amount of energy to everything that he does, every aspect of the EVN in terms of science, operations, and he remains an example to us all. There's no sign of Richard slowing down. I've been working with Richard quite a bit in his so-called retirement, and certainly he brings just as much energy and focus to his current activities. So thank you again, Richard, on behalf of the EVN.
Actually remember when we first met Richard, it was sometime in the 80s. In fact, Anton and I were talking about this recently. We were postdocs, I think, and you were this fierce directorial level person with a huge black beard. And you looked very, to young postdocs, you were a very distant figure, but over the years, I think we've become very close friends, and I value that friendship very much. I think I probably have to apologize for two things in our long relationship. I think I'm probably primarily responsible for bringing you and Billy to Manchester. So that's possibly one thing I have to apologize for, although I understand you're just buying a house. So that's very good. The other thing I have to apologize for is an incident in 1996 at the EBN symposium in Alcalá de Henares. Yes. He knows what this is. Any of you been to an EBN symposium, you know it's very sober.
And I wouldn't remember.
Most of us don't remember those sober affairs. But on this particular occasion, some of us have gone out early to get a meal, not realizing, of course, that in Spain, midnight is the normal time at which you sit down at the table. So we were fairly refreshed by the time midnight came round, and we continued to be refreshed through the evening. And it must have been 4 or 5 a.m. on the way back to our hotels, we realized that we were standing outside of Richard's hotel room. So we formed an impromptu choir and decided to sing the Jai Anthem. I don't know. None of us remember the words. We made them up on the spot. But Richard was less than impressed the following morning, so he couldn't understand why. So I have a little gift for you, Richard, to make up for that incident. And we just bring it around the table around here. It's from your colleagues and friends at CSIRO. It's a Parks jacket. I should say, I hope it fits. I had several people modelling it for me at Parks to make sure that you're about the right size. But you might need to take this jacket off.
Of course, I can wear this now that I'm not Jai directly.
Yeah, absolutely. And this, I thought this was where we're on the golf course.
Ziet er comfortabel uit. Het is niet zo goed.
This wine was presented on New Zealand exhibition of competition of wines, and it won the gold medal for the best New Zealand Chardonnay, Cosmos Chardonnay 2008. Welcome to New Zealand.
Dear Richard, I was your first PhD student during 1980 to 1984. You taught me, just having completed the master's thesis in physics, how to do field reactor. by heading on the land of my former promoter, you and George Miley took care of the actual supervision. I have a letter for you from George, who regrets he cannot be here, who regrets that trip. My appointment as PhD student in Leiden formally started on September 1 of 1980, but already on the evening of August 31st, I was in Bonn, opposite this impressive machine, the Mark II VLBI Corvette. I always thought that astronomy and astrophysics were learned from books, but you showed me that astronomy is also a hands-on science, that astronomy can be done. The signals are out there, carrying exciting information, and skills combined with an assertive approach make successful astronomy. I thank you for that. My PhD years in Leiden were pretty exciting, taking me often to Bonn, but also to Drobo Bank, to Socorro, and to Caltech, where I eventually would spend 4 wonderful postdoctoral years working with Marshall, among others. Wonderful memories, but what are memories? Memories are like a dog who lies down where he wants, has been said. A good colleague of mine, Professor Douwe Dreisma in Groningen, a psychologist, wrote a wonderful book, Why Life Speeds Up As You Get Older, dealing with memories. Well, remembering how to ride a bicycle or how to ride a car, remembering the theory of Pythagoras, is quite different from autobiographical memories, the ones that I'm talking about. And what makes the autobiographical memories to my PhD education special is that this period shaped the way I work, the way I see the universe, and the way I wonder about the universe. Also on behalf of later PhD students, René Vermeulen and Inja Snellen, who are both here, I wish to thank you for your guidance in the broadest sense, and in addition for the many years of friendship between you, Vinny, Connie, and me. The three of us, René, Inja, and myself, think we found you an appropriate present at the occasion of, I don't know what the occasion is. I think you turned 66 already, you did not retire, so maybe you go from 7-day work week to 5-day work week, but whatever, there is some sort of a celebration. You gave us students massive data sets from which we were supposed to draw up a consistent picture of structures, sometimes evolving in time. Well, I'm giving you a box containing 170 CDs, comprising well over 100 gigabytes of data, and we give you this data set, René, myself, and Inyas, and expect you and Biddy to draw up a consistent picture evolving in time from the year 1756 to 1791 of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. So it's Mozart complete on 170 CDs.
Now we move on to the fourth phase of Richard's distinguished career, the SKA era. John?
Thank you. Yeah, my name is John Bromage. I work for IBM. And somewhere between 8 and 9 years ago, I met with Richard. It was around that time that I started the relationship with Astron for the LOFA project. And Richard, for some reason, was triggered to start talking about the SKA with us. That was a great honor, I would say. A great challenge, and it's something that I can always defend, because often I need to defend what we are doing. And the SKA is important to mankind because it will help us to reach new frontiers. It's important to IBM because it's a real project with real requirements, not invented by from within. And thirdly, it's for world peace. And I mean that. So I can defend it on three dimensions, Richard. I fully defend it. And I can tell it to anybody, yeah? Any government, any nation, any human. Now, when it comes to the SKA, there's always lack of money. And I've investigated, I did a kind of scientific research about you. And some of your star friends told me about other interests that you have. And maybe this book will tell a little about the history of astronomy, and maybe you can help us to find money.
Hey, very good for IBM.
Yes, sure.
Hey, very good for IBM. I said that I'm a plumber and I'm working for IBM. Then comes the rest. Oh, sorry. Neem je onze roddels maar op.
Ja, ja. Ah, knip het eruit.
Ja, geloof ik. Wat voor boek is dat?
All right, it's a book. It's a book in Dutch. That's not translation. The fear based. God, the strive of the Wereldmacht, the einde van the Alpine. So this is about religions in one way or another.
Yeah, and the Arab nation.
And the Arab nation. And I can draw the conclusion that we have to look to find ways to get the Arab nations involved, especially those which have oil. Why
not? Oh, my.
I suspect that your patience is wearing slightly thin. I'm eager to hear Richard's attempt to rebut or appreciate his comments, so I will be reasonably brief. But I was reminded by the 170 CDs that Michiel van Kalm and I were this morning talking to various journalists, and Joe Bowler had put together a way of illustrating how much data the SKA will produce. And we felt that this wasn't perhaps the best one. So we converted this. If you took this data and the equivalent volume of music data on your iPod, how long would it take to listen to 1 year of SKA data? And it turned out to be 2 million years iPod playback time is equivalent to 1 year of SKA data, which is an interesting fact. Anyway, that wasn't the point of the discussion at all. I've known Richard. Longer than he may remember, he gave a presentation on SKA at a Department of Energy conference on megasonics projects when I was the EF particle physicist. I have now moved mainly into science administration and science policy, and I have become sort of part-time a sociologist of science, or trying to understand what makes big science projects work well, what are the qualities that we need, and what should we be looking for. And as scientists, we tend to think it's the project, it's the science that is doing, it's the goals and the engineering. And of course, all of those things are important, but it's absolutely obvious that it's really the people, and especially the presence of a charismatic leader who can take a project and make it a reality, drive it forward, who can connect the very practical implementation aspects of effective project management and making something build the team of people who will do that, but who has this clear, very forward-looking, inspirational vision that is sufficient to inspire and build the team. And I think you can guess that for SKA, Richard is that person. I've referred to now how he's fulfilled that role in a number of other projects as well. And so Richard is an inspirational leader character. On behalf of SDFC and my colleagues Simon and Michelle and the others who work with you, over past few years. I'm not going to give you a present tonight, but we want to, you know, I thought what is the best present we could give is to make this project a reality. So I, and I hope everybody else here, that will be our present to you, and we're committed to make it happen. So congratulations on your retirement, and good luck.
I've been privileged to, having worked with Richard through three of the four phases of his career, first at Caltech on the VOBI observations that we talked about yesterday, then when I was here in Europe on the various space VOBI activity that Richard talked about, and most recently during the SKA years. And several people have commented, Richard was tirelessly energetic. He was available 24/7. I could call many times a day or night, weekend. Except during the last 6-9 months, I noticed a bit of a slack off. I often couldn't get him on the telephone. I'd find out later he was off practicing his golf. So I talked to my resident golf advisor. Richard, we'd like to give you a little present, a book on how to perfect your golf, and maybe you won't have to practice so much.
I must say it is a fantastic pleasure for me to stand here and have been at this meeting and see so many friends have come to join in celebrating something. I mean, I haven't actually retired and it isn't my birthday, so it's good that you've come. And you know, we've had a couple of days of very interesting talks, and we're going to have one more day tomorrow, which will be very good. Now, I've, throughout my career, I've been really very blessed with good people to work with, people I've learned from, and we've been through, people who've stood up and spoken this evening are, all of them, people I've learned from, worked with, and continue to work with. Bruce McAdam started off as my supervisor, and as I said yesterday, I learned an enormous amount from Bruce, certainly about how to make contour maps of radio sources. But I did learn yesterday that he withheld the most important information from me, was how to calculate the fluxes much more quickly than I had done. And it just shows that I wasn't smart enough. Marshall talked about the rat's nest. I can still remember Radio Astronomers Trans-Sierra Nevada expedition, a sightseeing tour. You mentioned the first one where we had the cross Sierra Nevada discussion and the bear. That camera continued to work for several years afterwards. I think we did throw it away in the end, but it had these wonderful bear tooth marks in it. Just the other day, I discovered the report from the Rat's Nest expedition that was written by Hugh Ross, who some of us will remember as being an extravagant Canadian who walked at 7 miles an hour and had to fend off mosquitoes which were as big as your finger, and eventually ended up in religion, which was not a great surprise to those people who knew it. But I don't think you did. He didn't talk about the second Rat's Nest expedition which we had, where I think the first night we had to make sure that the bears didn't get our food. And my recollection is that there were 15 PhDs in that party, and it took us 3 hours to figure out a way of stringing up a rope to keep all our packs out of the way of bears. In all of this, of course, we were being led by Marshall, who was our leader, not only in the astronomy, but in our expeditions. And It's been a great privilege to work with Marshall and to continue to be friends over what is now a very long time. It's nearly 40 years, I guess. And that's one of the great things about this community, that we do continue our friendships for a very long time. And then we move to... Oh, by the way, I should come back to this point about disappearing after a week to go back and get married. It was actually 3 months. But it was, I can imagine how it was a bit of a surprise to you. It wasn't really a surprise to the two of us, although we hadn't quite decided before we got to California. Got to Holland and ran into Harry, I hadn't met Harry before, and I remember when Harry rang me up to offer me the job, and I said, well, yeah, I'll give you a reply in a month. And he said, no, it's got to be next week. And that's so I had to make up my mind, we had to make up our minds within a week, and that's so we did it and turned up in Holland. And one of the things that was really important, I think, for some of the things that I did was the freedom that I had to operate in the Netherlands. And it was both Harry and Wim Brouwer, who was in charge in Drigelow, the day-to-day activities of the whole observatory. Harry was in Leiden. The two of them allowed me to push on in the VLBI world, and it was I think that was the key to the sort of things that I was able to achieve, together with all the people many people who are sitting here in this room. It's important, I think, to give people freedom to operate. And I was reminded of that this afternoon when Harry was talking at coffee time about when he visited NRAO and walked into Dave Heesham's office, and Dave, unfortunately, has just very recently died. Dave was the director of NRAO at the time, and said to Harry, well, Harry asked him, what am I going to do here? And Dave said, well, you do whatever you like. It's going to be good. And that's the feeling I had when I got to Holland. And with all the very smart people who were there, and Harry's mentioned many of them, there's a lot that we achieved. I'm not sure that when I got to the point where I could actually tell people what they should be doing, whether I allowed them to have that much freedom, but what I did feel was important to set out a vision of what needed to be done and to be consistent about that. And I know in later years I've been certainly... accused is the wrong word, but at least people have said to me that I've stuck too long to particular timescales for the SKA and various other things. But I actually feel it's important to continue to remain consistent in what you set out to do. So the Netherlands has been a fantastic place. 31 years we were there, and the second part of it was in charge of Jive, and Hal has talked a bit about that. It is, I think, of the projects that I've been involved in, and we've been talking about these last couple of days, Jive is something that I really am very proud of. That 19 years has been going, and I think that sort of there's a fairly good chance it's going to keep going. So that's at least something. Now, the SKA is something, as John has said, that is still a work in progress, and indeed the best present that certainly I could get and many of us in the room could get would be that to be funded. In Jive, we put together a very good team, and the people who were there and still there, Hal and Mike, Leonard, Arpad, all the others in the staff, worked really to serve the EVN, and Simon mentioned about the EVN and what has been achieved in the EVN. I think it's something we can all be proud of, because we've turned a collection of national telescopes into something that is a unified whole, and it is generating good science. That really is very, very satisfying for everybody involved. The Hal mentioned this this tape recorder here, and it still occupies a place of great esteem in my office. Occasionally people see it and wonder what the hell it is. But nowadays when we talk about petabytes of data being shifted around, this is not quite the way to do it, but it is certainly a reminder of what was state-of-the-art at the time. And I was incredibly impressed by those tape recorders that the tape speeds going past the heads was 10 meters a second. And that, when you think about it, is enormous speed. And these things eventually worked. It took quite a while to get them to work. Of course, Alan Whitney, who's in the room too, had an enormous amount to do with that, and with the correlator that we built in Jive. And the one, the same thing was being built in Haystack. So it was that was another great collaboration. One of the things that, talking about freedom that one had back then at that time, is something that Roy was going to talk about in his talk, but didn't. And that is, at the time when we were thinking about buying the tape recorders for Jive, we needed 16 of them. They were expensive. We were pretty sure we were going to buy the English tape recorders from Penny and Giles, and it was just a time when the English went out of the European monetary system, and the economy seemed to collapse considerably, and the exchange rate against the EQ, as it was then, went down considerably. So I was given permission, or at least I sought it from the board, to actually buy a lot of pounds, because that would just allow us to get 16 tape recorders, which we wouldn't have got otherwise if the monetary crisis hadn't happened. And can you imagine that, a director of a relatively small institute being allowed to do that now? It would be absolutely impossible, because the responsibility for doing these sorts of things has been shifted so far up the chain these days. Phil talked about our early days and my black beard. I remember that got me into trouble occasionally at the borders, where they certainly looked at me and examined my passport very carefully, because even then they were concerned about the people looking like terrorists. So it wasn't too long after that I got rid of the beard. And I certainly haven't forgotten the Alcalar business. I don't think it was as late as 4 o'clock in the morning. I think it was about 2, but I remember being woken up. I looked down and I could see this group down there, and I could see some people who will remain nameless because they have very high positions now.
But I point out 3 are on this table.
Yes, I know. So, anyway, thank you for this jacket, which you can see I'm wearing, and I need something for playing that game. Thank you also to Sergei for the bottle of wine. Certainly going to enjoy that. And the hope to visit New Zealand before too long. We occasionally get across to Australia to visit family and so on, so it's not very far from Sydney across to Auckland. And then Peter Bartel, on behalf of the three students, or ex-students who are here, I'm overwhelmed by this box of CDs. I know I've got a lot of spare time now, but it'll still take me a long time. A long time to get through all this. I really do appreciate that. Now there's I think all three of you who are here are very different characters, very different ways of approaching science, but you've all been very successful. And, as a supervisor, all you can do is point people in the right direction and hope that they pick up the thread and run with it and do a hell of a lot more than you would have done with it. And I think, looking at all three of you, what you've achieved over the years, that's been absolutely the case.
And so did you. Thank you.
Well, that may well be so, yes. Jan Blommaert, I really am going to enjoy this book. And history is something that I'm getting more interested in, medieval history. And as some of you know, I'm particularly interested in Byzantine history for very obscure reasons. And the interaction of the Byzantine Empire, which ran between 330 and 1453, centered on Constantinople, had an awful lot to do with the East, and in particular, what happened after 632 or whatever it was that certain gentlemen started doing things. And I'll be very interested to see what I can learn from this book. Mm-hmm. I also, I don't know whether I'm the right person to talk about money to somebody who works at IBM. I've been very interested to hear about the Dome project that has got going in Wigelow, and I'm sure you had an enormous amount to do with that. I think I should congratulate you along with the people in Astron for getting that together, and look forward to seeing what results come from that. And then John Warmersley. Now I remember that meeting in Chicago, and I wasn't sure that I'd actually made any impression on anybody at that meeting, so I'm glad you remember that. We've been interacting with each other for, I guess, what is it now, four years? Three years, maybe. And, you played an absolutely major role in the cohesion that the project now shows, and in particular getting the funding agencies and the governments to the point where it looks like it's a feasible project, and I think that the momentum is there now. It'll be almost impossible to stop it. And there's a lot of obviously very difficult decisions to be made, and you talked about that this afternoon in your speech and your talk. But I've got every confidence that, guided by you and with the collective wisdom in the board, that the right decisions will be made and the project will move ahead into the next phase. We have a lot of work to be done to find the money to make it work, but I think once we get going into this next stage, get to the point where we can say we know what we're going to build and how much it's going to cost, we'll get there, and we'll have somebody doing some science. Hopefully, even I'll be doing some science when the telescope gets going. Ken finished up, and he's given me a golf book, and it's something that I'm working on. In some sense, it's a bit of a problem to get a book like that, because it implies that you don't play golf very well. But that is the truth. And it's certainly something that I aim to do a lot more of in the future, in those few hours that I have over from all the other things that I'm allowed to do. I think I'm really looking forward to spending these next couple of years working in a university environment in a different, all these, since I actually arrived in Europe when it was 1976, I've been working for governmental organizations, never for a university. And it's a different challenge to work for a university, and I'm finding out a bit more about it. I don't know whether Steve Watts is in the audience or not. But Steve, yes, I'm enjoying the interactions. And, it's for me personally, it's a nice way to move from what was a 7-day-a-week job down to something that's nominally less. And it hasn't yet got down below 5 days, but I'm working on it. So, Ken said that I was allowed to take as long as I have. I've probably taken too long, but there was a lot of people who've spoken, and I thought it was, I'd like to say a few words to everyone. But to end up, I'd like to say words to all of you that it's just been overwhelming to have you all here. And in particular, I want to finish up by saying that I'm very happy to have my whole family here, wife, with two kids, and they've been, you know, fantastic support all these years. They've actually had to put up with an enormous amount. You know, you don't go travelling around and getting all these various projects going without being away from home a lot of time. And so that's been, you know, a burden on all of them. And the fact that they're all sitting here, and I think they're smiling, means that I'm probably forgiven. Let me finish there, and let's all drink a toast to all of us here and the community that we represent. So, here's to all of us.
Program, and we're still expecting dessert and coffee.